Hello, and you're listening to The Seventh Reel. This week, Nosferatu, a 1922 silent film directed by F.W. Murnau, and Nosferatu the Vampire, a 1979 film directed by Werner Herzog. So this was your pick this week.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you go about it?
Michelle, he's addressing Michelle. This is for the listener.
Well, what's his face is doing Nosferatu? Is it Robert Eggers?
What's his face?
Yeah. He can earn his name back when he does it. And I don't think it's necessary because it's two perfectly good films already out there. So there we go.
I think it's more like Batman. They just keep making it over and over again because, you know, a new generation might be like, oh, this is a fun way to... Because the average person probably wouldn't watch the Herzog one or the much less the... Yeah, the silent one.
But
I see your point.
Equally watchable.
Yeah, they are. Surprisingly so. I mean the silent one, I went in being like, this is going to be a boring watch. I'll just sit through it. But I actually did enjoy it.
I agree with Michelle a bit more in terms of like, does it really need another remake after watching the Herzog one? Because I felt like he did try to like say something new about it. It is, I think, a much more philosophical interpretation of the story based just by using all these like shots of nature, all these parallels towards like, oh, like this, the vampire isn't like this like evil entity, but more something that's in line with the chaos of nature, which is I think like something he revisits a lot in his films. So I thought that was actually really interesting, and I'm kind of wondering now what Robert Eggers can mime out of another go take at the story, other than like maybe updating the visuals, because that's kind of what I thought he would like focus on the most, because the silent film was so striking.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he's gonna make a more visual silent film.
Do you think he might actually make it silent?
No way. If they couldn't even get what's that movie called, Quiet People, without a soundtrack, no way they're gonna let this guy make a movie and be like, you know what, no sound.
So apparently like The Northman did become financially successful after the theatrical release. Like, it made its money back, I think, through like streaming and stuff like that. So he did earn, this was a success ultimately. So maybe they will hopefully give him like, trust him more, like his process more, and like let him just kind of do what he wants instead of trying to streamline the production or streamline the film. We'll see.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Herzog one?
I thought it was the, because I kept comparing it to the Francis Ford Coppola one, because it's in the same time frame and it's basically the same thing, right? Exactly. But I really, really liked it. I thought it's like the perfect version of this story, because he looks so creepy and so, and fits the part like perfectly. So I was like just amazed by it. Plus his style lends itself to that kind of creepy sort of vibe of it being like Europe in that time. I don't know. Just works. It felt like sort of, because I don't know if you guys have the same experience, but whenever I watch like a feature, like fictional movie of his, it feels like it's still in the same sort of visual palette as the documentaries. So I immediately sort of, I think I have this reaction where it's like, oh, this is real. so it makes it creepier or sort of more impactful, I think. So that's how I felt. What about you guys?
I really liked it. I love how like he's able to kind of use the same, tell the story while using almost zero special effects. When he talks about like entering the land where like darkness gets blocked out, it's literally just shots of clouds like covering the sky. It's nature, and it's all of the stuff is like all the evil forces is represented through these like actual shots of our environment, our world. And it kind of, you're right in terms of, you're so right in terms of like how it still feels like it's documentary. It really grounds the setting. And I like how they made his Nosferatu is kind of like a sad guy who just wants to die, which I thought was a much more human interpretation of like the monster. I guess the nature, what's so scary about vampires in the first place is that they're monsters, but they act and like they act like us. But this is like they kind of erase that barrier. He looks creepy as shit, but like his eyes are so sad, and the stuff he talks about is so sad. And yeah, what do you think, Michelle?
One thing I noticed what was interesting between the two of them is how they treated like the plague stuff. Because like it was treated as such a bigger thing in the 20s ones compared to the Herzog one. But if you think about it, it makes more sense because they just had the Spanish flu. They were fresh, like, oh yeah, we're going to act quick on this. But then in the 70s, they're like, yeah, well, we haven't had this for decades, so we're fine. No need to worry. So they don't make a big deal about it.
Or they make it like, well, we've already all caught it, so let's just, you know,
yeah, but this, enjoy. The threat, the idea and the threat of it is completely gone from that society because they haven't experienced it recently. To sort of treat it that way. But
yeah. Oh, shit. Maybe Eggers' version, having gone through COVID.
I doubt it.
I thought the plague stuff in Herzog's version was, again, like moving it back into something as like not just this evil force, but something that just happens, right? That's why they kind of celebrate. After they were celebrating and dancing in the square, it's like, oh, we're, you know, it's part of life. It's already here. We might as well like enjoy whatever time we have left. And so they're like dining and wining and dining amidst a sea of rats, which to my understanding are all real. I don't know how he got his hands on that many rats.
I think they're lab rats.
Yeah, I read a bit about the rats and the treatment of the rats, and it's pretty horrific. Yeah. So well,
I guess he didn't know.
No, well, he wanted them to be, well, as they were being transported, I think they resorted to eating each other. And then when they got there, they were white, and he was like, I don't want white rats, I want gray rats. So they had to dye them, and that meant they had to put them in boiling like water or something, and that killed half of them. And then when they got out, the other half, I think, started eating off the dye or licking off the dye, and some of them died that way. I don't know. Yeah, it was not great.
Jeez,
that's
So I just read, so like in the silent version, they didn't have like the intellectual property of the novel to like fully use it. So that's why all the names are different, because they didn't have like copyright, because it was still owned by Bram Stoker's widow, who I guess was still alive then. And there was a lawsuit for the film to be completely destroyed.
Wow.
Whoa.
And then, so some, and I'm not sure if that actually happened, but then I think after she died, the copyright expired, and then they like recirculated it in the 60s and 70s. So that's maybe when Herzog saw it then.
Because Herzog's version keeps all the names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be public domain then.
But the endings are always different, right? Like, I don't think Dracula actually just ends with him getting staked. But in both versions of Nosferatu, it ends with the wife, like, taking a stance and, like, letting him kill her. Was that, like, just her plan the entire time?
Yeah, to stop all the other deaths.
She must,
because of the pure,
because she has pure love. They upped like the sensuality a little bit in the Herzog one, which I appreciate, because vampires should always have that little angle. I guess I can understand they can't really lean too heavily into in the 20s version, but in this one they kind of go for it. It is a bit of a seduction, which is very funny, because the actress Isabel Adjani looks as pale as the vampire, so she was already kind of there.
Supposed to, didn't she? She did that on purpose.
Did she? Wait, what?
I don't. That's what I saw that as.
Really?
Like, she did it so she'd be more enticing or something.
Oh, that's smart. But wait, I think the names are changed because I'm pretty sure the wife in the original novel is called Mina Harker, and Lucy is her friend who gets bitten. But in this version, the wife's name is Lucy, and she's the one who gets bitten. I guess he's just condensing it. And because Dr. Van Helsing shows up, he was already kind of a vampire hunter in the novel, or he's like also about this. But in this one, he gets reluctantly forced into the role at the end to stab and stay taken, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, I love when he was like taken to prison. It's like there's no prison. There's no one there. Like then take him somewhere.
Like, I don't know. There's no one, no guards. What do you think of, but he does change one thing, is that Jonathan Harker gets completely taken over and becomes the new vampire by the end of the movie, which doesn't happen in the book nor the original Nosferatu. And I'm trying to figure out what he's trying to say with that. Is he trying to say that this evil is like a disease that just passes from one to the other?
No. He was setting up the Nosferatu cinematic universe. That's what was going on. There was an after credit scene. You didn't see it. Where Frankenstein and the mummy come in and they're like, join us. The dark universe.
There's more of like a sexual element to the Herzog's one.
Yeah.
Like, because she almost looks like she's enjoying him drinking her blood at the end.
Right. Yeah, I got that vibe too. Yeah.
Because she's like holding her hands up to like draw him closer. But that's part of her plan to keep him there until like the curse
it
can
is
be
but you can sort of she looks like she's enjoying
she looks yeah the
at
actress
first she looks horrified and then she kind of likes it.
If I'm not mistaken, in the Coppola one, I think it's insinuated that Dracula sleeps with Keanu Reeves. Yeah,
I think that's yes,
right.
There's that sequence where his like succubus like rolls up in the bed.
That's what I was reminded of when I saw that. I was like,
I love how Herzog managed to recapture the castle. It looks almost identical to the 20s version. I don't know how he found a location that matches that so perfectly.
You could have found the same one.
Yeah, maybe it is the same one. Yeah, but I always thought that the old one was like built. It's like a set. That's why it looks like they can control it like way they do. But I guess there are actually just real castles that look like that, which was very cool to me. I didn't know that.
What did you think about like the shadows in the silent one?
When the shadow goes over her heart. It was really, really cool.
I think that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, when I first saw that, I genuinely paused the movie and just to stop and appreciate that for a second. And then I pressed play again.
That's really cool.
I thought it was incredible.
I was almost expecting Herzog to just do that again.
But that's
the thing. It's too cool of an effect, I don't know.
But that's the thing. It's sort of trapped in the silent cinema world, because how can that possibly work now, even if Eggers does it? I don't think it will have like the same sort of sentiment, because this voice, like, you could talk over it and it somehow ruins it. It's because it's more like ballet when it's silent, and then it works, and then you put the voices in and it doesn't work anymore. I don't know why, but it does.
I don't think you can marry like how like in the 20s version, because there's no dialogue. They all have to express it on their faces. So it's always the maximum level of emotion in everyone, from every single actor. And that just isn't how acting works in cinema, modern cinema
it's
anymore.
Completely changed.
Maybe he can bring it back somehow, but I doubt that his current cast, I don't know, who is it, like Johnny Depp's daughter, is going to be able to like bring out Lily Rose. Lily Rose Depp. I think Anya Taylor-Joy couldn't make it. She could maybe have done it, but I don't know about like this new actress.
ATJ.
One of the Skarsgårds to do Nosferatu?
Yeah, the It one. The clown.
The It one. The clown. He's pretty
good. What's his name? Pennywise.
Pennywise the clown. Bill Skarsgård. He was really good as playing both normal people as well as monsters. So maybe he can strike the balance. Who knows? We'll see.
Mm-hmm. We shall see.
I really liked the music in Herzog's one. The scenes where it's just Nosferatu, it doesn't have like a scary score. Instead, it has this almost like ethereal score. It reminds me a little bit of Philip Glass's music in like stuff like Hyo Nakatsu, or you might know him better as like the Dr. Manhattan, the music over the Dr. Manhattan sequence in Watchmen. It has more of that sense of like grandeur that kind of makes him feel like just this like force.
You can see that a lot in Herzog, though. I think mm-hmm. he feels that way in general. Like with Aguirre, you saw that with the music all over the clips and the people walking, sort of the same kind of ethereal music.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Even in his documentaries, when he's showing like the cliff side of a volcano exploding or whatever, it's same kind of like grandeur.
Nature is beautiful and terrifying, and we should respect it.
Well, apparently how he writes his films is he'll go for like a 60-mile walk and think up the idea, come up with the idea, know what the story is going to be, and then come back home and spend like a week writing it all down.
Wow.
Whilst listening to Beethoven.
Oh. You know what that comes across?
Yeah.
It really does feel like that.
Mm-hmm. Do we have anything else to add?
I don't think so.
All right, shall we take a break?
Let's do it.
And we're back. Now let's step right up and rate these films. Seven reels, everybody. Who wants to go first?
I think I have an idea of what mm-hmm. I would like to get.
Alright.
I'm gonna do 4 to the Herzog one and 3 to the Silent one. And not to say that I didn't like the Silent one, but I thought the Herzog one was just because it's like in color and stuff and there's sound. So that's more fun. So that's it. Yeah.
I guess I'll have to go with the same rating. I would say the Herzog one I enjoyed a little bit more because I didn't think the music that was set for the 1920s original was like that engaging. Or maybe it was just like the way that it was like intended and like played out, but I thought like the Herzog one really made like the music as part of telling the story. And it's all like very cohesive, so I kind of just thought that was, and had a little bit more to say. And so yeah, that would be my rating. Michelle?
I give 4 to the Silent one
mm-hmm.
and 3 to the other one. Mostly because I just like the visuals of the mm-hmm. Silent one more. I just love the shadows. Yeah. I think they're great.
They're awesome. Look how creepy it was. Like, it's so cool how creepy he looked in the hallway in the original one. Like, still very striking. It really holds up. Can't wait to see what the remake's gonna do.
I couldn't wait.
Bring that to a new generation. All right, so let's talk about what we see this week. Yusuf, you're chomping at the bits.
Yeah, I keep teasing.
Let us know.
I watched late August, early September, the SAS mm-hmm. movie. Loved it. Absolutely loved it, I think.
What's it about?
So group of friends, and they're loosely connected through this one friend who's an author, and he gets sick, and it's kind of the dynamic of what happens, you know, as the friend they all look up to is like sort of, you know, in this period of his life, and they're all just like, you know, freelance people, former lovers, or, you know, kind of moving in and out of each other's lives, like either like they're like one couple was selling the apartment they, you know, got married in, but they're still friends through the author guy, and mm-hmm. and deals with that kind of like that community of people you meet in your 20s and then kind of what happens as everyone after. Forges their own path, yeah. Mm. And the dynamics that result from like people being more successful than others and how people react to that. But overall, I don't know, it was really beautiful. It moved by really quickly, and it's sort of fascinating. He does these things where he takes like very tricky topics and like mm-hmm. kind of manages to dance around them and examine them in a way that's sort of, it should be like a very controversial thing, but he manages to make it like fun, light, and interesting. Like the author guy is in love with a 16-year-old and stuff like that, but it manages to not be like in a totally detestable, like creepy way. It was a great movie, loved it. That's why I was like, I want to watch more. So yeah.
All right. That sounds good. Yeah, we're gonna check it out. Is it on Criterion?
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. We saw. Oh wait, we went to Cineplex and saw John Carpenter's The Thing, the 40th anniversary version.
Whoa.
Re-release.
So how?
Notable for having like a 20-minute preamble, pre-show where they got like the special effects guy and the DP to come in and talk about like how great their work was, and it went on for way too long. He played ahead of the movie, went on for like 20 minutes. You're like, Jesus, like, is the movie gonna start? Like, just start the movie, let it speak for itself. Christ, just leave him. It's so funny how they went on for like so long while John Carpenter's message was like 15 seconds long. He's like, yeah, thanks for watching, bye, go back to smoking weed and playing video games, I guess. Still, it was really good. I thought it holds up really, really well. And it's suitably creepy, and the special effects are really cool and gross and authentic looking. Mm. Michelle, did you watch something that you wanted to bring up?
I watched Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh.
Which, just don't bother. Just don't. Don't. It's not even worth your time.
Don't bother.
Because I thought, I'll just go to the cinema on my birthday and watch something. What a terrible mistake.
Oh my God, really?
It was horrific. I can't believe how bad it was. Like, and they were all, it felt like they all thought they were doing something really important and really cool and edgy, but it just was like the most basic thing. And like, they don't explain anything, and they think that's gonna, you know, create a sense of ambiguousness, but it doesn't. It's just like, okay, so nothing's going on. And just, it's just so bad. Like, Harry Styles is just horrifically bad actor. I thought he was just okay before. Now he's just horrific. Florence Pugh was the one who held it all up, as everyone says.
Yeah.
But I was very glad when it ended.
I'm sort of fascinated by this now. Like, I kind of want to watch it.
If you watch it at, like, times two.
Oh, okay.
Because halfway through, I was like, is it over yet? And it was really dragging on.
Do they reveal, like, the twist halfway through?
Is there a twist in this?
I thought
it was just the...
Yeah, like, three quarters.
Oh, that's so dumb. You just spend the rest of it going, like, okay, so hard. When's it gonna end? That's too bad. I heard Chris Pine was, like, watchable in it. He's not good.
No, it just didn't make any sense. His part with Gemma Chan at all.
Hmm. Oh, well, that's an L on Olivia Wilde's part. It's too bad.
Yeah.
Too cocky for their own good.
I think maybe she shouldn't have. So they had this like whole controversy surrounding the film already, and to have it turn out to be kind of just this kind of half baked.
But Jason Statham is really happy.
I guess. Ted Lasso's getting another season. This, I don't know if Olivia Wilde's ever going to direct a movie again. So. Oh, we'll see who comes out on top. All right.
It's not like that, though. Don't ruin that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, stop saying that, Arvin. Sorry.
Shall we move on to our recommendations?
Yeah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have them all locked in?
Of course.
All right, Yusuf, you go first.
I'm going to recommend... Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. Sorry, I keep forgetting.
Not surprising.
This is a segment. All right. Yeah, I'm gonna go with that.
It's still good. I think it's a very apt recommendation. It's just.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a very different take on the story.
Yeah, and it's fun to watch Keanu Reeves be the worst. Like, I bet that's worse than Harry Styles in the Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah, his...
Yeah.
Truly amazingly stiff.
His British accent was amazing. It completely inhibited him from acting. Not that he was, like, you know, that.
Yeah.
I thought Winona Ryder was trying.
Yeah, she was good.
And Gary Oldman was really good.
Yeah, Gary Oldman was really good.
And I love the special effects. The fact that they aren't CGI. It's like him getting his son to, like, all right, do something in camera, make it work. And he does it. So cool. I don't know if I've already recommended this or not, but I thought a lot about Let the Right One In, the Swedish vampire film. Have I already recommended this? I hope I haven't.
No, I don't think you have.
No, it's really good. It's kind of a similar take on the sad vampire genre, just being cursed with immortality.
Oh, damn it. I had another one. Okay, sorry.
Well, it's too late. You locked it in with Francis Coppola.
Yeah.
The lines are drawn.
It's my fault.
Michelle, you have a recommendation?
Yes. It's Wojciech, which is another Herzog film with Klaus Kinski. And he's like a soldier who... He's just kind of like feels powerless, and he's got everyone's just, you know, being horrible to him, and he kind of like has a breakdown and does awful things.
Cool. So it's another Klaus Kinski melts down.
Yeah.
He's always a good time. He's really good at that. I love his interpretation on like the Nosferatu character, that sequence, the dinner sequence. Where he suddenly becomes so scary just by the way he approaches the guy, Jonathan, and like the way he shoves the chair aside. Like, it's like he's completely taken over and compelled by this primal bloodlust. I thought it was so good. Anyways, well, that brings us to what we will be watching for next week's episode. Yusuf, it's your turn to pick. Reveal it.
We're going to be watching Chinese Roulette and Beware of a Holy Whore. Fassbender movies. Double bill.
Bubble bill Fassbender.
Cool.
It's going to
be cool.
Fun,
I think. I think so too. So look out for that. Keep it real and stay safe, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
The 7th Reel is hosted by Marvin Huang, Michelle Hassel, and Yusuf El-Bashir. Logo by Joe Conti. Our ad break music is composed by Yusuf Sui Lim, and our outro music is composed by Yahya El-Bashir. Thanks for listening.